This download is the only extract the BBC has of this edition of Desert Island Discs. The presenter was Roy Plumley.
Mr. Fleming, where were you born?
I was born in London.
You went to Eton. I believe your main distinction there was in athletics.
Yes, it was. I'm afraid I wasn't terribly good at my books.
Victor Ludorum twice and public schools hurdles. And then Sandhurst?
Yes, I went to Sandhurst with the idea of going into the army and into the Black Watch, incidentally. But then it was decided to mechanise the army, and me and a lot of my friends decided we didn't want to be what we thought then would be large-scale garage mechanics.
So?
So I had a go at the diplomatic and learnt my languages for it, and I passed in seventh, but there were only five vacancies, and so I decided not to have another go, but to go straight in and start earning some money. So I joined Reuters, which was the nearest thing to the diplomatic in a way, because I could use my languages, German and French and Russian. And I had a wonderful time in Reuters, was a correspondent in Moscow and Berlin and all over the place. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I learnt there the sort of good straightforward, or at any rate, straightforward writing style that everybody wants to have if they're going to write books.
How long did you stay with them?
I stayed with them for 3 years. But then I wanted to earn some more money, and Reuters weren't very keen on paying large sums in those days. I no doubt they're much better now. And so I went into the city, mm-hmm. but I didn't get on very well there because I'm not very good at making money as such.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean just pure making money. I must do something that entertains me. If it makes money at the same time, well, that's all the better for me.
Yes. Well, then the war came along and you joined the Royal Navy. You became personal assistant to the Director of Naval Intelligence. Well, this led, not surprisingly, to some rather violent action, I believe.
Well, not so much that, really. It was a very interesting life. I took part in the Dieppe raid, which was a very bloody affair, and I had some exciting adventures around the world, and altogether I had an extremely... I couldn't have had a more interesting war, if I can have an interesting war.
And presumably your naval intelligence experience provided some useful source material for your later books.
Yes, it taught one what one could say in writing thrillers and what one couldn't say, and of course it taught you really how the intelligence machine does work. I can't say that, of course, I tell that exactly in my books because they're fiction and the whole thing is much larger than life. Mm-hmm. But as I say, at least it tells you what mistakes not to make.
And when the war ended?
Then I went to the Sunday Times, to the Kempsey newspapers, and I became their foreign manager. They didn't have a foreign department in those days, and it was my job to place correspondents all around the world and look after their welfare and see that they wrote plenty of intelligent stuff.
Yes. Now, your books. You've written now, what, 11 James Bond books?
Well, there's actually 12, because the next one has just gone to my publishers.
Yes. There's one a year.
There's one a year.
So the first one then, what, 1950?
52, written in 51, I suppose, yes.
Had you had this character growing in mind for a long time?
No, I can't say I had, really. He sort of developed when I was just on the edge of getting married, and I was frenzied at the prospect of this great step in my life after having been a bachelor for so long. And I really wanted to take my mind off the agony. And so I decided to sit down and write a book.
Yes. Is Bond based on any particular person or combination of persons?
No, not really. He's a sort of a fictional mixture of commandos and Secret Service agents that I met during the war, but of course entirely fictionalized.
Yes. Is there much of you in it?
I hope not. I mean, people do connect me with James Bond simply because I happen to like scrambled eggs and short-sleeved shirts and some of the things that James Bond does, but I certainly haven't got his guts nor his very lively appetites.
Now, the first James Bond book was an immediate success.
Yes, it was.
How long do these books take you to write?
6 weeks to 2 months, the actual writing, but I never correct as I go along. I try and get pace into the narrative by sitting straight down at the typewriter. But then, of course, I do 2 or 3 months correction afterwards, and then one has to correct the proofs and so on, so
yes.
It takes about a year altogether, let's say.
Are you a systematic worker? Can you work so many hours a day regularly?
Yes, I find I have to. I work for about 3 hours in the morning and 1 hour in the evening, and I find unless I stick to a routine, if I just wait for genius to arrive from the skies, it just doesn't arrive. I just get on with the work.
You write these books always at your vacation home in Jamaica.
Yes.
Do you look forward to writing a new one every year?
Well, I don't really, unless I've got it firmly fixed in my mind. And, of course, This is a very bad period for me this time of the year because I'm trying to work out the next adventure of James Bond, which has got to be written in January and February, and I'm always rather in despair, thinking that I'm not going to have enough book to write.
Yes. There's been a cumulative rise in sales and success since the first book.
I think there has, with the exception of the last one, which was, let's say, last year's one, which was The Spy Who Loved Me, where I tried to break away from my normal formula, but the readers were so furious that James Bond didn't appear until about three-quarters of the way through, and that it was written ostensibly by a girl.
In the first person?
In the first person. That I must confess that it wasn't a success, and it took quite a beating from the critics.
And now the books are being made into films?
Yes, they've made Dr. No already, and it's been a tremendous success in England, and even more of a success, I think, in America, where it's opened several weeks ago, where it's breaking records. They're now doing From Russia with Love, and I went out to see them in Istanbul, see the unit at work, and I was tremendously impressed with the casting and the way the script had been written, and I think it's going to be an equal success.
They're going to do the whole James Bond canon.
They've got an option on doing all the books, yes, one after another.
11 bestsellers in 11 years, and very profitable film sales. Now, on the face of it, that looks like unmixed success, but some of the press notices haven't been all that glowing. They've accused you of being sadistic and too much sex. Taking the charge of sadism first, your torture scenes are pretty beastly in some of the books.
Well, I don't know how many of them you've read, but of course they're nothing to what they really are in real life. And I think the old days of the hero getting a crack over the head with a cricket stump have rather gone out. I mean, we all have become considerably wiser since the last war. And I've tried to bring verisimilitude into these books, and it's certainly true that the critics have occasionally found them pretty strong meat.
Yes. What effect do you think these scenes have on the average reader? Are they going to give him unhealthy ideas, or is this vicarious violence a harmless way of sublimating aggressive tendencies?
Well, I think that's a way of putting it, but I was brought up on what we used to call fourpenny horrors, and I can't remember that any of the excitements ever did me any harm. All history is sex and violence, and I think it's ridiculous to go on writing thrillers in the old Bulldog Drummond, John Buchan way when life has come so fast past us.
Yes, well, sex. Bond takes his sex when he finds it almost as casually as he takes a drink.
Well, he has one girl per book, approximately, and that's one a year. I think that's he's a bachelor. And he moves around the world pretty rapidly, and I don't see any great harm in that myself.
No, he's unusually fortunate in meeting these lovely and cooperative girls.
Yes, I envy him.
All your books, Mr. Fleming, show tremendous attention to detail. You've obviously done a great deal of background research. Have you ever slipped up at all in any of the James Bond books?
Yes, I'm afraid I do from time to time. I take a lot of trouble not to, but inevitably things slip past me and past my publishers. And, for instance, in the last book, the girl goes into the bar in the casino and orders half a bottle of Paul Roger champagne. Well, it turns out that the Paul Roger is the one champagne firm that doesn't turn out half bottles. And, again, some kind friend commented on the fact that when Bond drives up to his headquarters in Regent's Park and smells the smell of burning leaves and realizes the summer has come to an end, I was making a mistake because the Regent's Park is now a smokeless zone. Well, that was very helpful. But I find that the other people make mistakes. Shakespeare, for instance, had clocks chiming in ancient Rome. And
yes, somebody else writes and tells them.
Yes, it's very helpful of them, and I try and correct them in the later editions.
How much longer do you think you can keep Bond going? Is he a job for life?
Well, I don't know. It just depends on how much more I can go on following his adventures.
You don't feel that he's keeping you from more serious writing?
No, I'm not in the Shakespeare stakes. I've got no ambitions.